We're going to speak to Dale Malfinger next about cabins, though. And Dale has been a principal emeritus with the firm Sala Architects in Minneapolis. He co-founded the firm in 1983 as Malfinger and Sazanka Architects. He has written several books, including most recently The Family Cabin, Inspiration for Camps, Cottages, and Cabins, which was recently voted Best Interior Design Book of 2017 by Library Journal. He's designed several Cook County cabins, and he joins us now on the phone. Welcome to the Roadhouse, Dale Malfinger.
Well, it's so great to be back on your show.
Yes, Dale, I feel like you're a celebrity up here. We were talking about you before the show, and it seems like everybody's got your book, The Cabin, on the shelf. And now we've got a new quest to acquire and read and enjoy The Family Cabin. Tell us about the latest project.
Well, I've enjoyed writing these books for Taunton Press, and I noticed that several of the projects that I've designed, I had clients that were extended families. And so I really wanted to deal with the subject of, well, what do you design when, you know, you might have a family cabin that isn't so small always. I mean, yes, some of them are small. I've got one in there that's only 27 by 14. But occasionally I get a client, let's say two twin sisters, their husbands, each have four kids, grandma and grandpa. So now you're up to about 14 people, and you can't do a little tiny cabin for that large a group.
Well, I think that's what's the special charm about this book, Dale. The Family Cabin really takes us inside, a rare glimpse inside these families and their history and their sort of intergenerational connections. And just, you know, not the average pretty architectural book, but a real rich history book. How did you choose these families and these cabins?
Well, it takes a bit of research to find these projects, particularly since my publisher likes for me to find things from all the way across North America. So it does take a little bit of traveling, either by websites or direct traveling. So I like the fact that I can go into Maine and write off my lobster dinner.
Yes, business and pleasure. And so they're not all Malfinger cabins. There's broad spectrum.
Yeah, there's a vast spectrum. For me as a designer, these projects that I find elsewhere in the country quite often are, in essence, my research. It's great to see what other architects, or in some cases builders, or in some cases homeowners, have designed in other parts of the country. And I'm just as interested in an old cabin as I am in a new one. So I have a cabin in there from Maine that's on the historic register, and then I have a fairly contemporary one from west of Seattle.
Yes, the variety is incredible, as well as the photographs, Dale. You know, of course it had to be pretty, but I happen to notice that every cabin has a dusk sort of twilight photo of it all lit up inside. Was that very intentional? Now, these cabins are just glowing.
Well, I think it makes for a nice photo. In other words, when it's sometimes a photo taken of a structure in the middle of daylight often has way too much shadow, and it's difficult to see it or understand it or understand how the inside and the outside interrelate. But a photo taken at dusk or a little after dusk with the lights on inside gives a great understanding of both the inside-outside relationships.
Oh, and like I said, they just glow. They just shine on the land. And so you're a pretty renowned cabinologist, I think is like your claim to fame. Are there other such cabinologists in the nation? Is that something you collaborate with? What does that field look like, and what are the special traits and training that have made you so respected?
First of all, it's a kind of an illegitimate title, only in the sense that another radio personality, a fellow by the name of Joe Suchere down in St. Paul, anointed me with that title once when I was on his program. And I think it was because he heard that I was not just designing and writing about cabins, but I was researching them at the university with my students. And so he anointed me cabinologist. And no, I've not met other cabinologists around the country. That said, I've met some people who are pretty knowledgeable on cabins in various parts of the country. So an architect friend of mine, Bob Knight, out in Maine, I think is pretty knowledgeable. He has a bunch of cabin designs that he calls Lucia's Little Houses, named after his wife. And so yeah, there are other people who have a repertoire of knowledge about cabins and other places.
Well, so in speaking about cabins and cottages and camps, now that's in the title, Inspiration for Camps, Cottages, and Cabins. You break it down regionally. Give us our listeners that map.
Well, you know, the name Camp Cottage and Cabin really could be identified with the same building, but you just move that building to different parts of the country. So if you're in the Adirondacks, you're most likely to be, that building would be called a camp. You move it over to the New England shore along the seacoast, it's going to be called a cottage. And you take that structure and put it in northern Minnesota by you, and it's going to be called a cabin. So it really depends on where you are in the world, not necessarily the look of the structure. And that, in fact, I would say that if you, out in the middle of Wisconsin, if you have a structure near a lake and you, if it's owned by somebody from Milwaukee, it's going to be their cottage. And if they sell it to somebody from Minneapolis, it's going to be their cabin.
Yes. Well, we Minnesotans have some certain connection to cabins and cabin country. And that family cabin is what you really draw on in a lot of these stories. And if you wouldn't mind just sharing some inspiring tales of some of these families that have been coming to years, the cabin on the island by the Ludlow family comes to mind.
Yes, that's a particular important structure to me. I have my own cabin on Lake Vermilion, so I get to boat by this quite often. And the story behind that is that a family from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, had been vacationing occasionally, back in the 40s or 50s on Lake Vermilion, and they asked Hod Ludlow, the owner of the resort, if he would be willing to build a cabin for them over the winter and have it ready for them the next time they came up in the summertime. And the only instructions they gave him was that they wanted all the rooms to face the water. And then they gave him a little bit of money, and then they left. And so when they arrived next summer, Hod had stretched it out like an old-style motel where you walk outside from room to room. So if you're going from your bedroom to the bathroom, you're out underneath a covered walkway. Or the same would be the case if you were going from your bedroom towards the kitchen or living dining. And one might have thought that over the years, the family would have filled that in and made it more hospitable to inclement weather. But it's charmed them for so many years that they haven't altered it a bit. And so it's still there today in that form. So that's one of the great stories, I think, that I'm trying to present in the book.
Yes, trustworthy indeed. We're talking with Dale Malfinger, a renowned cabinologist. He's got a book out, a new book, The Family Cabin, Inspiration for Cabins, Cottages, and Camps, or something in that order, Dale. And, you know, if you wouldn't mind a little nitty-gritty talk here about the actual, what makes a great cabin? What do you find in your design that really sets it apart?
Well, I think one of the things that can set it apart is the fact that it connects to a family over time, that even if they haven't owned it for a long period of time, their intention is that they will, and that when they're investing in it, they think as much about their children and grandchildren as they do about themselves. So I think that's important. I think another important ingredient for any cabin is that it's not particularly over-concerned about privacy. It's much more concerned about bonding and the fact that we really like to be at cabins with our friends and family and so forth. So if they happen to smell the coffee because it's brewing 10 feet away from where their bed is, that's perfectly fine. So I think there's some qualities about cabins that are endearing. And I think also some of the materials used, cabins traditionally have used a lot of wood. And fortunately for us in Minnesota and for many parts of America, wood is still a plentiful resource. And we, in our own work, and I think in some of the cabins that I've recorded, we take note of the local woods to that area. So we try and find local mills that are milling the pine or aspen, or in southeastern Minnesota, the hardwoods. So we had done that. One of the cabins featured in the book happens to be in southeastern Minnesota. It's down near a trout stream, and a lot of the local hardwoods were used in that cabin.
Well, you know, if I can just direct everyone's attention to page 92, there's some, I think, some real key Malfinger design theories here, Dale. I don't know. I just happen to have the book, but this is what it takes. No crawl space, no critters, right? Dishes and dancing in the same room. Love that the design is what we call our old cabin, but not on steroids. So you take these old cabins and you just keep them authentic, and you bring the families into the rooms. And I don't see any flat screen TVs in these photos. I don't see any entertainment rooms with home theater systems. I see a lot of board games and bookshelves and fireplaces. And so talk about those interior spaces of sharing family space, family time. Everything is open, isn't it? You're focused around the porch and the card table.
Right. And I think, you know, the table is a very important part of any cabin, probably more important than any kind of a living room space, because so many things occur at the table, whether you're doing the puzzle, eating lunch with a walleye you just caught, or telling stories about the fish that went away, or doing projects at the table that might be have to do with creating the flies for fly fishing or whatever. So a table is really an important area for the family to gather at and do things. And I think you probably were quoting Anne, one of the owners of one of the cabins that I designed. That particular cabin is out in South Dakota. Now, we don't necessarily think of South Dakota as an area of a state that has a lot of lakes, but in its northeast corner, saddled up to the Minnesota border, there are a few lakes, and that's where Anne has her cabin. And Anne went there as a young girl to this lake, and she's still going there. And she remembers back to dancing with her mother and in more recent times dancing with her daughters, and she hopes in the near future to be dancing with grandchildren. So she has certain rituals about things that go on in the cabin, and I think that's a really common and important attribute about cabins.
All right, and here's some more technical wisdom from a cabinologist. What is more important for a stellar cabin, the location or the floor plan?
The location.
Yeah, correct.
I think first and foremost, we want to go to this area of wherever, to the mountains, to the sea, to the river, to the forest, wherever we want to go. The land is what draws us there, and so we can't lose sight of what that land is all about and what makes it unique. And so whatever plan, whatever structure we bring to that land, it must respect the land and yet find a way to engage the land through views, through the character of how we shape the structure, and how we access and move through the land to get to the structure, and our ability to go out and enjoy nature, whether we're going out into a porch or onto a deck or on a terrace. All of those things are important ways for a structure to engage land in a way that retains the quality of the land that brought us there in the first place.
Yeah, and I would presume you got to go out and sit there in all seasons, and the more these owners know their land and know the views, the more successful the project.
It's great when owners of land don't immediately jump into having us design something, but rather possibly own the land, camp on it for a summer or two or winter or whatever, and get to see the different seasons, the different conditions of the land. And land property can change quite substantially from winter to summer when leaves disappear and all of a sudden vistas open up. I know in my cabin it starts to enclose much more in the summertime, and yet in the wintertime I can get up high in an upper bedroom and I can see down Lake Vermilion.
It's all about the views. We're talking with Dale Malfinger, cabinologist, author, architect, founder. He's out of the Twin Cities area. His firm, Sala, is definitely on the map, Dale. I see Malfinger Design in the real estate listing. So you've made your mark on Cook County. About how many cabins are up in the neck of the woods?
Well, I don't really know. I don't necessarily keep count. I've done well over 100 cabins, you know, probably in the 150 or so cabins throughout the Midwest, mostly. And there are certainly several of them that are along the shore of Lake Superior and some on the inland lakes. And some I've done for multiple clients. So, that is to say, multiple structures for the same client. And yes, a few of those have sold to other people. And so occasionally my name gets thrown in. By the way, I should mention that I will be up in your area. I think it's July 7th for the annual tour of Edwin Lundy and or other structures that's put on by the Schroeder Area Historical Society.
That's right. You have a book about that great architect as well. Dale Mulfinger, so you are quite famous. You must have a million people that want to work with you. I wonder, do you choose the client? Does the client choose you?
No. I don't have that kind of luxury. I don't. My clients choose me, and I really, really appreciate the uniqueness of each of my clients. I love the fact that many of my clients will take me into ideas and places that I would have never thought about had they not arrived. So
that's right.
Some clients come to the scene with very specific goals and character that they want embedded in their project. And other clients come and say, Dale, I don't have no idea what I want. You've got a blank piece sheet of paper over there. Just start drawing and we'll figure it out. So all of those clients are fun to work with. And I'm honored by the people who come to my door.
Well, what impresses you more, your clients' trust in you or their own vision? I mean, where's that meeting point?
I think the fact that they trust me, even if it's with their dreams and ideas and their budgets. So I think one of the things one's able to do one has worked for several years is that trust. I think they're able to feel or see that trust in the other work that I've done and been able to chat with past clients. So usually I don't have to sell them on the notion of trusting me with ideas. I'm honored by these people who come to my door, and I really enjoy the fact that they entrust me with their future family place.
Oh, that's sweet, isn't it, Dale? I'd love to just sit around the fire and talk cabins with you all night. We're in the midst of a pledge drive show, and we got to kind of wrap things up. I do have so much to ask you. Let's go to the end and look to the future. And what is the future of cabins?
Well, there are some things about cabins that are in question. I think the biggest one is whether or not the next generation of young people will, in fact, enjoy cabins as much as their grandfathers did or grandparents did. So that's yet to be determined, whether a more youthful population that's keen on living in the city on a bicycle is going to want to drive 4 hours to their cabin. But that said, that may be okay, too, because it's nice to not overpopulate these lakes and areas that we're trying to keep pristine. So a little less demand might be appropriate.
Well, and I loved your advice for those that are seeking the sort of zero maintenance easiest way in.
Yes, the zero maintenance cabin is the one you rent.
Yes, well said.
And that's gotten much easier today, which is another force on cabin real estate values, is that it's a lot easier to rent private cabins today through the various rental agencies that are out there. And so, therefore, the demand to actually have ownership of a cabin may not be quite so great.
Well, Dale, congratulations on your new book, The Family Cabin, Inspiration for Camps, Cottages, and Cabins. It's out on Taunton. It's lovely.
Well, thanks for letting me on, and it's so great to be a part of your fundraising. I'm a big believer in radio. I love listening to the radio all the time. So best wishes there.
Great, deal. If you're in town, and stop by in July.
Okay, will do.
Take care.
Bye.